There were many people that presented different questions in halacha related to kashrus items, related to other items. Many of these questions we got answers for. Some of them we didn't get answers for yet, and I hope that the answers are going to be forthcoming very soon. And these are questions that generally I think could apply to everybody and could affect a lot of different decisions. First of all, a side note, not related to the kashrus issue, which applies to people. The question was asked regarding a yard site. Here in Eretz Yisrael, it's most common that a levaya is generally done on the same day that the person passes away. Usually they'll try to make every effort possible to make sure that the body does not remain overnight before burying. And this is one of the things that's done much more correctly here in Eretz Yisrael than in Chutz Laretz. In Chutz Laretz, it's very rare that this is done right because you have unions there and they only work 3 hours a day, this particular union, and it's difficult, it's generally almost impossible to do it in one day. Here in Eretz Yisrael, they're makbid. Unless it's impossible, they'll make a levaya at 12 o'clock at night or 1 o'clock in the morning to make sure not to let the night pass over it. So that in many cases, the yard site is not difficult to figure out because the yard site, the day of the Yom HaMisa and the Yom HaKvura are the same day. The question is, what if they don't come out on the same day? Which do you follow for the yard site? And the answer is, according to all Poskim, as far as I know, that it's the Yom HaMisa, it's the day that the person passed away on, that's considered the day of the yard site. The only exception to this is, if there was a difference of 3 days, at least 3 days, if somehow, chas v'shalom, due to whatever circumstances, it wasn't possible to bury the person until 3 days after the person was nifter, then the first year, the yard site is considered the Yom HaKvura, the day that the person was buried on. The second year and further on, it goes back to being the Yom HaMisa, as in all cases, as we said earlier. This is an important piece of information to know. I've heard the question many times. Person knows exactly what the answer is. There's no suffix. We should be zeuchen not to know from this, to know from simchas. Person has to know, though, what the halacha is. Last week, I had the opportunity to go in to see Rav Moshe Halberstam, who is one of the dayonim of the Eda HaChredis here in Yerushalayim, and I asked him about this question in terms of a microwave oven. Is there a possibility of using a microwave oven for milchiks and fleishiks, for chometz and for Pesach? And his answer was that he himself looked into this a lot, and he also discussed it with Harav Weiss, who is the Av Bezdin, the leading dayon of the Eda HaChredis, which means that usually these would be the strictest rabbonim in terms of chumrah that would be available. And he said that the answer, the conclusion that they both came to, is that a person definitely is permitted to use a microwave oven for milchiks, for fleishiks, for chometz, and for Pesach. The only thing that a person has to know is to make sure that it's wiped clean, that there's nothing that you see be'en. There shouldn't be any dairy stains or flesh. There shouldn't be any spilled soup that you see on the item or anything like that. That was to make sure to wipe it clean before using it for anything different. That was, if you used it before for milchiks and now you want to use it for fleshiks, you must make sure to look inside well to make sure that there's no tangible milchiks on the floor or on the sides of the oven. Once a person has done that, it's definitely okay to use it for the other one because it doesn't cook with heat. As far as Pesach, let's say, what about when it comes to Pesach? He said, if a person wants to be like Midas HaChasidus, not halacha. Halacha, he said he would definitely consider it acceptable if it's wiped clean and well. Maybe a better cleaning than you do even during the year, but just that, cleaning and nothing more. For Pesach, if you want Midas HaChasidus, maybe to put something under, or to use, in other words, to put something under the dish that you're using for it at that time, so it shouldn't actually sit on the bottom of the floor of the oven. Although technical halacha, it would not be a problem. Rav Halberstam mentioned that there are different, that there are other opinions. He and Harav Weiss looked into this, and this was their conclusion. Myself, right now, in other words, I was told by my Rebbe Zichrono Livracha before he passed away that I had a responsibility for our group to seek out a Pesach. I myself am not a Pesach, to seek out somebody and to try to, and not necessarily, that doesn't mean that the first one that you find is definitely the right, the one, or the one that you're going to stick to forever. When we lived in America, this search took place for a certain period of time, and I felt we had found somebody there, a Dayan, who I felt very comfortable with and very qualified, and we stuck to that Dayan straight for a period of about 8 years. With many different shilas, lakula, lachumra, and I felt that it was a very responsible decision. Since before coming to Eretz Yisrael, I spoke to that Dayan and asked him in Eretz Yisrael, were there people he knew? In other words, was there anybody who he could recommend? And his answer was not, well, there are thousands of rabbonim, it's no problem. He thought carefully, and with a little bit of hesitation, he proposed Rav Halberstam, whom he knew. Number one, he's related to him in some distant way, and he also knew of him, and he felt that this would be a good choice. Since we came here about a year and a half ago, I have gone to him on many instances and developed a very good relationship with him. I've seen that there's a period. I don't want to go into detail, but he seems to respect and understand the group to a large degree, and so far I've felt very comfortable in terms of asking him shilas in any sphere, just about, and in terms of receiving the answers. So I'm mentioning that this is the answer that he gave, and he stressed that this wasn't only his own, that this was a psak that Rav Weiss, the Roishav Bezin of the Eda HaChredis, concurred with him 100%. There was a question about a microwave with a heating, with a browning element also. I didn't present that question yet. I hope to take care of it, Mitzvah Shem. Another question that was asked was regarding onions and scallions. First of all, to be able to know, are those two, in other words, we know that in Halacha there's an issue of a dover chorif, something that's sharp. When you cut something like an onion that has a sharpness to it, cutting it with a milchik knife or fleishik knife is different than slicing a tomato or a cucumber. It has different halachas in whether it becomes fleishik or milchik or not. The answer was that there definitely is a difference. It pays to know that the two do not have the same exact halacha, onions and scallions. As far as how to apply this, if and when a shaila comes up, a person should ask. There are certain times where if the same halacha, the same item occurred with onions, and the same item occurred with scallions it would be easier to find a heter to be able to use it or for it not to mess something up than it is when it comes to dealing with onions. Now, one of the questions that was asked was regarding, for example, if a person sliced onions with a fleishik knife and then put it into a food processor, what happens? Does that trafe up the food processor? Does it, does the food processor become fleshic as a result? The answer was that it definitely is a shaila. It becomes a shaila. And the shaila doesn't only apply to the blade, to the blades that are used. It's not a matter of just switching the blades and being permitted to use the rest. Because of the way that that machine works, the item spins around and affects everything in there. The answer that he gave was that it's a shaila. We must look to find a heter, meaning that we have to investigate exactly how this was. The person sure? In other words, let's say there's a difference if the knife was definitely fleishik. In other words, where you know it was used within 24 hours. On meat, on hot meat or something like that, or if it wasn't used within 24 hours. And there are many other items that could come into play to developing a heter. Now, to a person who doesn't have much experience in halacha, this could sound like, what is this, some kind of a game or joke? We're going to sit and figure out a heter, we're going to try to piece together. And the answer is that this is part of the Torah that Hashem gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, that Chachomim have the authority in certain cases. The Shulchan Aruch says that in certain cases, if this and this occurs, the item becomes forbidden. It's usur. In another case, if something different happens, the item becomes questionable, and therefore, if you can be mitzarif, two items, two sfeikas, like, if you can show how there's two issues involved here that are suffic, you're not sure, maybe this touched this, and maybe the thing that touched it wasn't even 100%, the Chachamim have the authority, by combining two things like that, to be able to say, based on the fact that we're not sure, we're not really 100% sure that it was A, and we're not sure that it was B, we can be matirit. In this Shaila, it's going to require a little bit of research, but he stressed that because a food processor is an expensive item, the Torah, not a rabbi from 1989, the Torah that was given by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai, says very clearly that in these cases, we work to try to be matirit. And he seemed to imply that there could be ways of being matirit, of finding a heter, however, to stress that once a person knows this, then they know lechatchila. If you know that you want to use a food processor and keep it pariv, you will not cut anything like an onion or a scallion with a meat knife or a dairy knife, a clear meat knife or dairy knife, and then put it into that. This was definitely stressed that those things should lechatchila be kept completely separate. One question was asked, somebody mentioned about cutting off, they heard something to the effect, when you're cutting a vegetable, whether it be a carrot or an onion or something like that, is there a difference in which part of the vegetable you cut off first, the top or the bottom, that kind of item? He made it clear that lemaisa, there's no question about it. It doesn't matter. The question was raised about warming up challah in an oven, either doing it in an oven or doing it on top of the blech, in a single cover, in a double cover. He made it very clear that lechatchila, a person should not do this. Period. Meaning that in terms of a person wants to have warm challah for Shabbos, etc., if your oven is anything other than pariv, if your oven is fleishik, or your oven is milchik, in either case, even if you're double wrapping it, definitely lechatchila, this should not be done. It should not be done. The question was asked, is a blech any different? Putting it on the blech, not in the oven. Again, lechatchila should not be done. If the blech is fleishik or anything like that, it should not be done. The only way you would warm it up is in a parav oven. When we're dealing with bread or challah, it must be kept parav in terms of any cooking or baking. Once you're eating a meal, you're allowed to make a meat sandwich. That's not a problem. But the challah itself must be baked or warmed or heated in a way that it's not coming into any question of dairy or fleishik. Even if you're going to eat it just with fleishik, still lechatchila should not be done. Now the question is, a toaster oven, you have a toaster oven that's used to make milchik and fleishik, that a separate toaster oven actually for milchik or fleishik, use a toaster oven, let's say, to make cheese dishes, and you use it to heat up bread and to make toast in. I believe that in that case, it's not a problem, as long if you know that toaster oven is a milchik toaster oven, and the toast that's made in it is not going to be eaten together with meat in any case. Now, let's say a person had a toaster oven that's fleishik, and a person toasted bread in it. Does it mean that bread becomes fleishik to the extent that you have to wait 6 hours? Or the answer is definitely not. Definitely not. It's simply a matter that you could not, as long as there was no fleishik visible there, you would simply not be able to eat that toast together with milchik, together with milk. So in other words, if we're talking about warming up toast in a toaster oven that's either milchik or fleishik, can you use that toast for a fleishik meal and I was eat it together with fleishik? The answer is no, definitely not. In terms of eating it, does it make you fleishik or make you milchik? The answer is also not. As long as you're not eating it right away together, it's not a problem. Even if there were a 1 minute separation, in other words, even if there's, as long as there's some separation, period. If it's something practical that does come up, I would definitely want the question written down and we'll get the answers to it. Mitzvah Shem. Regarding what happens if a person has a pot and the pot's been sitting in a drawer, they use the pot at one time, they don't remember, did they use it for fleishiks, for milichiks, for parav, it's sitting in a drawer for a year or for 10 years or something like that, what happens? Are you stuck? Are you allowed a kashrut? Are you not allowed a kashrut? The answer is, in such a case where a suffix like this arises, you are definitely allowed to kasher it and then use it for whatever you want, either parav or fleishiks or milchiks. Even though we know that generally we say a person is not allowed to, we lemaisa follow the psak of the Chassam Sofer, who says that if you have a milchtika set of silverware and you decide one day you don't want to use it anymore for milchiks, you want to use it for fleishiks, can't you simply kasher it and by kashering it make it parav and be able to use it for fleishiks? There are poskim that say yes, you can. There's no problem mitzad halacha. The Chassam Sofer seems to be the popular poisik that's accepted in the Ashkenazic world for this item. The Chassam Sofer said that during the year, throughout the year, you're not allowed to do it. The only time you're allowed to do it is when it comes to Pesach. When you're preparing for Pesach, if you want to kasher a set of silverware to be able to use it, to switch it from chametz to Pesach dik, then in the kashering process, you're allowed to, once it's kashered, you're allowed to decide to use it for whatever you want. If it was milchiks before, you can either continue using it as milchiks or switch it to fleishiks, etc. When we use the word kashering for kelim, we're always talking about an item which is one piece. If you're dealing with an item that's more than one piece, such as, for example, knives. Usually, most knives are two-piece, where there's a handle and the blade. To the best of my knowledge, under normal circumstances, there is no way to kasher that. Unless it's possible to take the two pieces apart, unless we're dealing with an item which can be unscrewed. This is not to be confused with toiveling a keli. There are some people that forget and they say, you know, when it comes to toiveling a keli that's made by a goy and you want to be able to use it, does this apply to toiveling at all? The answer is no. There it doesn't matter if it's four pieces stuck together, you don't have to separate them. If that's its normal use, if it's normal use that way, you don't have to do any taking apart. When it comes to kashering, under normal circumstance, you could only kasher a keli that's one piece, no handles. The answer is that that's only in the case of certain shilas, meaning when the knife became treif to a certain limited extent. No, it's not where it became, not where you took a fleishik knife and dropped it into boiling hot milk. If that happened, you're out. That knife is finished. There are certain shilas that come up. If you cut if you had an onion that you used with fleishiks and you cut it with a milchtik, you know, something like that, in those cases, there are certain instances where the halacha is to stick the knife into earth. These kind of things must be asked to a rov. In other words, when a shila comes up with a knife or anything like this, you have to ask to be able to know in which cases you may and which cases you can't. In glass, this is again one of the important differences that a person must know between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. And that's not to say that either one is more religious or less religious, chas v'shalom. There's a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch between the Ramah and the Beis Yosef when it comes to glass. The Beis Yosef, who is one of the leading Sephardic poskim, says that glass does not absorb whatsoever, which means there doesn't exist a possibility of a glass becoming treif. If I take a glass and I dip it in boiling hot milk, and then I rinse it off and dip it a minute afterwards in boiling hot chicken soup, the Beis Yosef holds that it doesn't matter because the glass being put into the hot milk absorbs nothing. Glass does not absorb at all whatsoever. If I take a glass that I used for fleishiks, milchiks, and now I want to use it on Pesach, as long as I rinsed it out, washed it out well, there's no problem at all. I can use the same set of glasses for milchiks, fleishiks, and Pesach. Now, there are many Sfardim that even have glass plates, not just glasses. They have glass dishes, including plates, soup plates, everything. And if a person eats in such a person's house, you have to be careful to ask. Because for that person, it's 100% kosher and acceptable. And if you're an Ashkenazic Jew, you're not allowed to use such a glass, such a plate or such a glass. Unless you're using it for cold, let's say for cold soda or something like that, where it's not a problem. Otherwise, if you're using it for any kind of hot drink or something like that, to you, it's treif. To the other person, it's 100% kosher. When it comes to Corningware, I believe in some ways it has a halacha like gliss, so I would like to check on that to see what halacha would be in this case. Is there any way to warm up challah for Shabbos? There was an alternate solution given. If a person has a tea kettle, let's say, or something like that, that they keep strictly parv, and if something like that is sitting on a blech and you would put it on top of that, cleaning it good doesn't make it non-fleshik. In other words, unless you burn it out. If you put the oven on high for 20 minutes, let's say, that makes it parv, that neutralizes it.
You cook challah in a thing, not an oven, but you had cleaned it well before you. After you can cook
the oven
cleaner.
Yes.
And I burn for 20 minutes, that's considered.
The burning for
20, 100%. For burning at least 20 minutes.
Yes, yes, yes. Now again, this is not, what I'm telling you is the best way, l'chatchila, the best way to do it. If somebody didn't know this halacha for some reason, and somebody didn't burn it out, but the oven was completely clean, you would ask a shayla, and it's very possible that the challah is kosher, you can eat it, it didn't mess up the dish, nothing, you understand? But just if you're asking what's the correct way, the best way to do this, this is the best way, to avoid this shayla at all.
When you put the parv pot, you know, if you have three flesh and one frozen,
there's
only four.
When
you put the
parv
pot?
Clean it and then burn it?
Yes. First wipe it clean, leave the fire on it for 20 minutes, and it becomes parv. My answer is I would want to double check that, meaning even if it's been put on a hot fleshix, is it done in such a way that there's never any wetness? Meaning if you have two items that are hot, if I take a hot pot, no, as I take a milchtika pot and I put it on a fleshik burner or something like that, and something like that happens, one of the first questions that the Rav will ask were they completely dry at the time? If both were completely dry at the time, usually, not always, but usually, that'll prevent the shayla from happening right there, because usually, in order for something like that to become made treif, in other words, if it's fleshik and milchiks, it requires that there should be wetness there. Dry, even hot, usually does not transfer, you know, fleshiks or milchiks. Could be, in a case like this, if you know that it doesn't come into any wet contact at all, could be that's enough. If there's a question, I would definitely want to present this as a shayla to be able to find out clearly. Because there's certain cases like this where it's not healthy to be a machmer, it's healthy to know the right answer. There doesn't exist a possibility within Judaism of a person going to a school or a lecture or a lecture series or anything like that and learning everything there is to know about even a specific topic. We recently, in our Gemara shir, came across a situation where one of the rabbis of the Gemara said, regarding the laws of Hanukkah, that he used to do a certain thing a certain way, until he saw one of the other rabbis doing differently. He used to use oil from sesame seeds, from shumshum, from poppy seeds, for his Hanukkah menorah, because he knew that you're supposed to, that there's a mitzvah that the menorah should burn for a long period of time, and he knew that that kind of oil burns the longest, the oil that comes from shumshum. And then he saw another rabbi using olive oil, and he asked him why he uses olive oil, and he told him, because even though the oil from shumshum burns longer, olive oil gives off a clearer type of light, and the flickering, there's less flickering, so it's considered more of a hidur mitzvah. He wrote, from that time on, I switched to using olive oil. Now, a person learns this statement in the Gemara. There are many people, I've mentioned this in the past, there's many people that I've heard of that went to a certain rov and used that rov for a period of time, And then the Rav changed a psak that he had given earlier, and they said that proves that he's not a Rav. Because if he had to change something, then that implies that before he didn't really know the right answer. If he didn't know the right answer, why was he teaching Torah? So then he can't be my Rav. That's a mistake in religion. If you look in the Gemara, you're going to find Tanoim. These people were way above the level of Maluchim, and the Gemara says that they changed. There are many cases in Shas where up until a certain point they were under a certain impression. That didn't mean his whole house was treif until... It didn't mean he wasn't yotze the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Chas v'shalom, you definitely are covered. If you use candles, you're covered. There's better and better and best, and a person doesn't learn the basics in one lesson. Certainly they don't learn the best. That's something a person continues to learn ad mea vesrim shonah.
Are you allowed to tell parents things?
Ah, this is a very important question. Are you allowed to tell this halacha to everybody? The answer is definitely not. This is why not every man is a posek. Because a posek, part of a posek's judgment has to be who he's speaking with to be able to judge what level that person is capable of keeping, what not. And that's why we're trying to be particular in saying what's a lechatchila, what's a bedieved. A person has to judge for themselves to a degree what they're capable of, what they're incapable of. It's healthy to know that there's more and less and in the middle somewhere, and for a person to know where they stand or where they could stand. But they're definitely, I've seen many cases where I asked a shayla to a posek, and I described to him the type of person that had presented this shayla, and the answer was, in that case, it's osur, or in that case, it's mutter. That's a very important... We gave you the example just now of a food processor. What if the food processor cost $10? It was a certain kind of food processor. It would have a different halacha completely than if it cost $200 or $100. What do you mean? The Torah changed... Yes, the Torah considers price also. Hashem also considered price. And there's a question of throwing out a dish. When we say that a dish is treif enough to throw out, or to kasher, or neither of the two. Or sometimes to leave it for 24 hours without using it, and then you're allowed to use it again. Each one of these things a person needs to know. We'll hold it over here for now. It's a shame. If anybody has these kinds of questions, please write it down, and we'll try to do our best to get it answered by somebody that's definitely qualified to answer it. Number two, this issue with a shul, if possible, whoever could present any recommendations or things that not just of particular interest to them, but something that would apply to a shul or a place like this, it would be very welcome.